You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, good evening, young lady. It's great to see you after a hard day of work.
Always.
And so, what are we going to talk about tonight?
We're going to talk about the cabal.
The cabal. Well, what's a cabal?
A cabal is a small group of people united in some design to promote their private views or interests of an ideology, state, or other community, often by intrigue, and usually unbeknownst to those outside their group or those who they're caballing against.
Good job on the teleprompter. Well, so yeah, let's talk about that because, you know, it's been my belief for quite some time that just about only 20 people really control the destiny of the United States of America. Would you agree to that?
Well, I think kind of at any one time they do. It's really the House, the Senate, that's your main controllers. But then you have the leaders who really are the controllers. So
right.
You have the likes of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer
and Adam Schiff and those people. And of course, don't forget the United States Supreme Court, right? Because those are the people that vote on the laws, they rule on the laws and decide what's constitutional and appropriate as opposed to what's unconstitutional and legislation or laws that have to be removed. But I just really think when you break it down and you pay attention to television or any form of media, you're going to find the same 20 people involved again and again and again.
Sure.
And again. Who else is involved in the governing of the United States of America besides the president of the United States? I mean, let me ask you this. And not to monopolize the conversation.
No, go ahead.
But when was the last time you heard of any of President Trump's cabinet members saying anything?
Well, you have to look for it. You have to look for it. But that's just because the media only talks out of one side of their mouth. So,
right. Yeah,
that's all that you hear. But, yeah, what we've heard a lot of is the whole Democratic line of thinking. And, you know, what was just as an aside, what was interesting that I just saw was Sean Hannity did a thing on his show where they took the word impeachment that people had said in the Democratic Party and in the news media, and he went month by month and showed a clip of every single month of the president's presidency for the last 3 years in which they were talking about impeaching him.
You know, I saw that, and I thought that was extremely interesting. So really, the narrative as far as the Democrats have not changed since President Trump was elected, and this is part of the entire cabal thing.
Well, you and I really...
I mean, we have 327 million people in the United States that are essentially governed by about 20 people.
Right. And those 20 people are not necessarily doing what the people elected them to do. And that's always my issue, is that our politicians don't do what they're elected to do. And in this case, the politicians on the left are not allowing the politicians on the right to do what we, the people, elected them to do. And what we elected the president to do certain things, and they have blocked him every step of the way, and they've tried to get him out of office every step of the way.
In a peaceful coup, but a coup d'etat attempt consistently, nonetheless.
Nonetheless, yes.
Right.
But, you know, and you say peaceful, and it's peaceful in that it doesn't
Well, nobody's dying.
Right.
Okay. Nobody's getting shot. Bloodshed. Nobody's being assassinated.
But their characters are being assassinated,
yes.
And the lies that they're telling are horrendous. And I'm frustrated with it every day, and I think a lot of American people are frustrated with it every day. And so we've had even a louder cry from, you know, the likes of the Maxine Waters and the Schiffs and the Nadlers to impeach the president. And these are people that have vowed to impeach him for much longer than recent. I mean, really through his whole administration.
Ever since he got elected.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it would take us too much time to go into all of the crazy things that have been done and said. And what, you know, it's always a pot calling the kettle black kind of thing in there, where the Democrats will complain about something that Trump does or something somebody in the administration does, when they have done that thing 10 times more themselves.
Right.
But everybody overlooks that. And it's frustrating that everybody overlooks those things. But now they want to impeach President Trump over something that I think is trumped up.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes.
But, you know, okay, so let me just entertain me for just one minute.
Do you want me to sing, dance, what?
Well, I get a little bit radical. But I want to make an analogy, and I don't think it's that radical of an analogy. If you take dictatorships, right? Now, obviously, you have the head leader who is the dictator, but you have close members of that dictator's party that basically are their movers and shakers that control the destiny of an oppressed nation. Would you agree?
Yes.
I mean, take a look at China. You've got a couple of leaders of China. You know, you got the president of China. You got the prime minister of China. But really, it's the about 15 people behind, and I don't know what the name for the upper echelon of the Chinese government is, but you know what I'm talking about. You got about 15 of those guys that really control what the president and the prime minister of China say. If you look at the Maduro regime in Venezuela, you've got the top guy who's Maduro, who's the dictator, but you've got a relatively very small group of people that surround Maduro that control the destiny of the Venezuelan people. I think if you looked at Cuba, you would see that. I think if you looked at the Soviet Union, you would see that, or actually Russia, you would see that. And so here's my radical analogy for your consideration and response. What the heck is the difference between those oppressed nations and what is happening in the United States of America right now with the Democratic Party and what they're trying to do to the duly elected president of the United States?
Well, exactly that. And you're exactly right. And the other thing that comes to mind about that is, why are all those countries you mentioned, why does it happen that they can control the people? It happens because once they got into power, which the Democrats are trying to do in an unethical way here, is they got control over the money and the military.
And the media.
And the media. Well, they already have that.
Well, okay. Well, I think they started.
Yes, the media. Yes.
And you know what? I think that Americans are so naive. And, of course, a lot of Americans from the era of pre-World War II and World War II are dying off, all right? Because by now they're in their late 90s, mid-90s to late 90s. And we have a couple of, you know, we have a few centurions running around. But those people lived through fascism in Italy and national socialism in Germany that swept across Europe. They remember those things. And they remember how Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler came to power, and they were both cabals.
Yes.
Okay?
Well, and this is what I believe, Ron. And I'm not a radical person, but the more that I look at what's happening right now, it is a cabal. A cabal being a group of people who have an ideology who want to overturn somebody.
Right.
That is exactly what's happening. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi was hesitant to go along with it because of public sentiment. But, you know, this is just my belief, that this whole Ukrainian thing was either manufactured, as I've read, or if it was not manufactured, it certainly was blown out of proportion, because I certainly didn't hear anything in the transcript that, you know, made me think twice. But either way,
well, you know, both
they jumped all over that.
Go ahead.
In order to you know, now have this excuse to impeach. Why? Well, the reason why, the only reason that I can see why, is because they know that they cannot win this election. They see the crowds out for Trump. They see the handwriting on the wall. They cannot win in a fair election. So what they need to do is nullify all of the American people's votes from 2016 and make it as though we never voted the way that they did, because now their big talking point is that Trump is an illegitimate president. That's what Hillary's out saying to everybody. So they want to remove our ability to even cast a vote for President Trump, because they want him to be impeached and not be on the ballot. And that is the only way that they can win.
And you wrote a wonderful article that's on America Out Loud called The Cabal Conspiracy and How 20 People Control the Destiny of America. And this is exactly what you're referring to.
Yes. That the thing that scares me is that they want to just take away all of these American people who are for President Trump. And, you know, he's collecting money like crazy, and I'll be one that's writing a check myself to his campaign, because the American people don't like what they see. And I also saw one of the Democrats say today, I think it was Maxine Waters who said, you know, America's really behind us on this impeachment. No, I don't think so.
No, I think these people are really wrong. I think they've made, meaning the Democrats, I think they've made a huge miscalculation, because Nancy Pelosi is sort of stuck, because what does she have? She's so worried about the squad and the progressive left socialist faction of the Democratic Party, which is growing by leaps and bounds, that she's scared that herself and the moderate faction of the Democratic Party are going to be cast aside by the progressive left. And I think that's the impetus for her and Schiff pushing the whole impeachment issue. Because there's really, one of the pundits on Fox News spelled it out, and I thought, and I think Jason Chaffetz, the former congressperson, Jason Chaffetz, who's been on, I think, the House Intelligence Committee or something, he spelled it out very, very well. There's no way that they are going to be able to rule on, meaning the Congress, vote on impeachment for Trump for high crimes and misdemeanors. There's no way that's going to happen. And that's because the Senate controls whether the impeachment moves forward. And even with Rhino Republicans, they don't have enough votes for that. And, excuse me, it would throw the American government completely off kilter. It would destroy the stock market. And we'd probably end up, even though we have a booming economy, I think we'd end up in a recession.
Oh, I think definitely.
Okay,
we would.
And hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people going out of work.
Companies will start, you will start seeing this very soon. If this continues, you will see companies starting to tighten their purse strings.
Yeah.
And it's going to have a definite effect on the economy. But you know what, Ron? They don't care.
No, they don't.
And what they have said is that they are willing to, it would be worth it for them to lose the House and continue forward with this. What they've given themselves purposefully here is they've given themselves a license to go fishing again. So by saying that we're going to do an investigation into having an impeachment, they've given themselves just kind of a hunting license and a free-for-all to go subpoena everybody and try to find something that they can pin their hat on. And this is what's disturbing. This should never happen to anybody in our government.
But, you know, let's talk about subpoena powers for a second, all right? So if they actually vote on an impeachment investigation,
yes,
where they have the power of subpoena, that's faulty logic. And I'm going to tell you why. Because then President Trump gets to go on the defense formally and defend himself. And that means that the Republicans also have subpoena power.
Which is why they're not having that vote.
Right. But of course not. Now but you vote, see what but, a farce it is? Do you see what a farce it is?
Yes, but now it's just one-sided where only one side get. Well, how is that fair? Only one side has a subpoena power, and they're subpoenaing everybody for everything. Again, it's a hunting and fishing expedition to go see what they can find that they can hang their hat on.
But their only intent is to subpoena people that they believe can provide some reasonable suspicion or probable cause to believe in, you know, there's high crimes and misdemeanors. And I don't think it's there. On the other hand, when the Republicans subpoena the Democrats that the Democrats don't want to subpoena themselves, then I think that's when the story really opens up. And we start seeing all the nasty things that the different, you know, Democratic leaders have done in the past, and we get into the whole Joe Biden thing. And let me just make a comment about old Joe Biden. I think he's done. I really do. I think he'll put up a little bit of a fight, but I think this is really damaging for him. I think Elizabeth Warren is climbing in the polls, and I'm not so sure that good old Uncle Joe is going to be able to survive this. And really, when push comes to shove, who the heck, except a Kool-Aid drinker, is going to vote for an avowed socialist like Elizabeth Warren? Who's going to vote for her?
I mean, yeah. Well, let's... Now, I don't know who's going to vote for her.
She's scarier to the Democrats.
Let's talk about the comparison here between Joe Biden and setting his son up with a corrupt company who is being investigated. And by the way, the investigator who got fired is now coming out and saying things.
Right.
So this is going to get very ugly. Look at the can of worms that they open. Now, I read an article. I don't know if it's true because there's so many lies out there that you don't know what to believe. And you and I spend a good deal of time trying to sift through and find the truth. I haven't been able to find the truth one way or the other on this, so I will say that out front. But I read that Adam Schiff put this person up to this, that this has been planned to do exactly what he did about the whole whistleblowing thing. And then Adam Schiff acted like he didn't know about it and, you know, he
reported it to the FBI.
So it's all convoluted, but I absolutely believe that that is why this is a cabal. They are attempting to overthrow our government, and they are attempting to take our vote away that we voted in 2016, and they are attempting to take our 2020 vote away from us. And that is... I mean, I just can't say enough. It is exactly like a third world dictator country.
Yeah, that's really scary. I don't know if you had an opportunity to read the complaint from the so-called alleged whistleblower, but I did, and I read legal documents for a living, and I know when a document has been authored by an attorney rather than just a regular person, and that had attorney speak all over it. Okay, specifically speaking to the new elements of whistleblowing, by the way, which was snuck in by Barack Obama's administration just hours before
President Trump came in. These things were all set up.
Absolutely. Don't think that that's not part of what Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were talking about when they said we've got an insurance policy.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet that they have three or four plans for this coup against President Trump. And now we've only seen the second one. Or we already had the first one,
which was the Russian
collusion. Now we're seeing this one. I think there's more to come.
Well, remember the whole situation with Judge Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, even though that was not directly against Trump, everything that they do is meant to bring him down, bring him down, bring him down, and, you know, stop all of his judges from being approved. And, you know, so they continue on this, and that's what the article is talking about.
Well, I thought it was a great article, and I hope everybody reads it. You ready for a second cup of coffee?
I am. I'm going to throw some Baileys in there.
Excellent.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We're back for round two, but I got to tell you that great minds think alike, because besides our coffee, we both independently snagged some ice cream. And I saw you got some Ready Whip there, so we're all set to go.
Yeah.
So listen, I want to talk about social media oppression.
Wow.
Okay. I know. Well, because myself and a lot
oppressed?
Of my... I do feel oppressed. myself and a number of my friends and professional colleagues have begun to experience some of this social media oppression. And I know people like to joke about Facebook jail or LinkedIn jail, but it's a serious thing. And what I want to talk about is, and it's interesting, I've never been in Facebook jail, but I've been in LinkedIn jail, and it's not pleasant. So let's just kind of talk about that in what's happening in social media, because it is really becoming oppressive. And the people that control social media, meaning Facebook and LinkedIn and you know, maybe Instagram, I don't use that, and Twitter, I got off my Twitter feed. I got rid of Twitter because I wasn't even really using it, but I saw a lot of people complaining about it. So I said, well, hell, I don't need this. And I got rid of it, and I haven't missed it for 1 second. But what is happening is, and I think it's this younger millennial generation are trying to control the narrative and try to remove conservative voice from social media. What do you think about that?
Well, I definitely think that that's true. Because those organizations are run by very, very liberal people. And they have a thing about controlling the narrative about what comes out. So on Google, you know, they control, when you do a Google search, they control what you're going to see and what you're not going to see in that Google search.
Absolutely. And they've testified to that. So that's, you know, that's not us talking smack. That's a real thing.
Right. And in Facebook and LinkedIn, they will make your things either completely invisible or not allow you to post them, or they will make them visible only to a few people, which is what they did to the two girls that are on Fox all the time.
Diamond and Spice.
Silk.
Diamond and Silk.
Yeah. And they had a hard time getting themselves out of Facebook jail there.
I think that they would have never gotten out of Facebook jail. And by the way, you know, they were making money off of Facebook because they were posting videos and people would, I think it was like a pay-for-click thing.
It was their business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with it because it's an entrepreneurial spirit. And look at all the commercials that are on Facebook. So, you know, Facebook has no right to complain. But I've seen, you know, a number of what I would call questionable ads in Facebook, and to have them try to shut down Diamond and Silk, I thought that was extremely unfair. So we are seeing this, and they are trying to control the narrative. Now, when you hear them in front of Congress, it's just a bunch of, you know, techie gibbly-gook, and they say, well, these are algorithms, right? Algorithms are doing this. Do you remember, Linda, with our firearms company, which is doing phenomenal in California right now with our, you know, carry concealed weapon and our personal safety self-defense training at Street Safe Defense? And we couldn't get any good reviews on Google. Remember, people were writing reviews all over the place that were just fantastic reviews, and they would send us copies of the reviews, and we would go on Google to find the reviews, and they weren't there.
Right.
And so I ended up, remember that afternoon I called Google, and I'm talking to one of the Google customer service representatives, and he says, well, it's an algorithm, because we can't tell whether that's a real review or it's a made-up review. What a bunch of bunk is that?
Yeah. virtually.
They just don't want any reviews because we have a firearms company and they're against guns.
And they agree that that's the case. Because when I spoke to them, they said that they can't have anything and won't have anything to do with firearms. So,
But that's an oppression.
Because we have a Second Amendment right in this country, and they've decided that we are not allowed to talk about it. And that is an oppression. Now, you want to talk about LinkedIn because you were in LinkedIn jail. So LinkedIn has basically four different types of jail you could be in, and there are different levels of jail, okay?
All right.
So you can be restricted, which means maybe you sent out too many invites to people and people say, I don't know who you are, that type of thing. And then they kind of start looking at you and they don't let you do all the LinkedIn invites and so forth. The only people that you want to invite is people maybe that you have a connection with.
Right. And by the way, I was formerly a LinkedIn premium member. So I paid a monthly due to LinkedIn to allow me to reach out and develop contacts and to talk and to communicate message anybody I wanted, and it was unlimited. So that's not me. So it wasn't restricted.
Right. No, I understand it wasn't restricted.
Right.
We'll get to you way down the line here.
I'm probably down in like one of the worst ones. prison. Is there a LinkedIn prison?
But just so people know that if you are restricted on LinkedIn, that you can take that restriction off yourself, and that probably the key takeaway from that is that you only invite people to link in with you that you know will say yes. Okay.
Right. Well, actually, the way it works with me, because I use it only as a professional site, I don't use it as Facebook. There's a lot of people that want to link with me just because of the nature of the work I do as a forensic criminologist and as an author. So people want to get a hold of me, and they're constantly, you know, wanting to link with me. But I'm very selective on who I choose. They have to be pretty much in my industry for me to link with them.
Right. Well, the next thing that could happen to you, which did not happen to you on LinkedIn, is that you could be swammied. And that.
Okay. So tell me what that is.
Well, site-wide auto moderation. So if you belong to groups on LinkedIn and you post something and somebody in the group decides that they don't like it, now they're going to swammy you, and they're going to make everything that you put in now goes to that group leader of that group, and they have to approve that what you put can now be shown.
Oh, well, again, I'm only on professional, you know, I'm only in professional organizations.
Yeah, but even if you were and you put something that somebody complained about, that could happen. I think that this is what happened to you, is you were suspended, although you never found out why you were suspended.
No, I had zero notice. I think you're right. I was suspended, and I had zero notice as to why I was suspended, and I had zero, and believe me, I tried a million different ways to get a hold of LinkedIn to get some customer service and an explanation as to why I had been suspended. But let me tell you what really angers me about this. On LinkedIn, I had, notice I use the word had, because I don't have them anymore, I had over 8,000 followers on LinkedIn that were extremely interested in my articles. I would post, you know, interviews on television with Fox and One American News and, you know, all the different news organizations I do work with, but it was the articles, the forensic articles, the investigatory articles that I wrote that people really enjoyed. And guess what? LinkedIn told me that I had 20 days to reach out to them and, you know, try to make my case. And I used every single, or I would lose all my followers. I would lose all my links. And guess what happened? Every single day, a couple of three times a day, I tried every single way to get a hold of anybody in LinkedIn to listen to me. And there was virtually, and I think people will talk about this because it's their experience as well, I never got a response. You can't call them. They have a telephone number. Try calling them. All right. They never answer the phone, and you always go to a loop, a voicemail loop that sends you to the LinkedIn website, and links in the website, and none of them will respond to you.
Well, and
I lost them all, so I got nobody.
What being suspended means is exactly what you said. You can't access your LinkedIn account. Your profile is no longer active.
Correct.
No one can pull up your profile.
Correct.
And you don't show up in search results.
Correct.
And there may or may not be an advance warning.
Right.
Now, what causes that? According to an article I read, it said LinkedIn's terms of service are pretty clear and not what you might expect. In other words, things like you can't have a logo as your profile picture.
I do not.
You can't. No, I know that. You can't create a personal profile using a business name. They have LinkedIn do's and don'ts. I can't imagine anything that you would have put that would have caused what they did,
right.
And then they wouldn't tell you. The fourth thing that can happen on LinkedIn is that they can shut you down, and that means that you've broken the rules repeatedly or so drastically that LinkedIn has completely closed your account. That is not what they did.
No,
with you.
I'm the suspended guy.
Right.
And guess what? By the way, they were successful in basically shutting me down. It was the same result as if I would be shut down by LinkedIn, because when you have no due process, you have, first of all, no notification or notice as to what, if anything, you did wrong. That's number one. Number two, you have no due process. Even though they say there's due process, there's none, because there's zero customer service on LinkedIn. And you have a limited amount of time, i.e. 20 days, to resolve your issue. You lose everybody.
Well,
so now
that may not be true. Oh. And I do have some solutions that we can try. But they have 225 million customers. Million?
Perhaps.
Yeah. To take care of. So you have to create a ticket in their system, and it takes them about 10 days to respond to that.
Good luck
with
that.
And you can also try social media, oddly enough. They have at LinkedIn Help on Twitter, and they're very responsive. So we're going to try that and see what happens.
Well, guess what? I closed down my Twitter account.
Oh, well.
And I tell you what, like I said, I don't need it. I know some people are addicted to Twitter. I'm not one of them. You know, when I had it, I think I looked at how much I used it. I think I tweeted. Is that what it's called when you tweeted? I used to say tweak.
Yeah,
I tweaked
used to
it. I tweaked it. But anyway, I think I only used it maybe 40 or 50 times in, I don't know, 4 years or something
like
that.
I use it from time to time, and I like, you know, putting my articles and things on there. But it's so interesting that just in the last couple of days, I happened to see, and I honestly don't remember who they were from. They weren't from anybody like famous or anything, but there was two people that tweeted something that I found really offensive and dishonest about this whole impeachment thing. And I did answer them with something to the effect of, you know, you ought to check your facts before you speak because you don't know what you're talking about.
Ooh, that sounds kind of dangerous, okay? For Twitter, you're lucky they didn't knock you right off the platform.
Whatever. And then and then President Trump put something out saying thanks for the support, because Breitbart put something out on Twitter, and it was and I didn't do it because I didn't see it, but to check if you supported the president or you didn't, and 98%. Of people supported the president on this Breitbart poll. And so President Trump went on Twitter and he attached that poll and the results, and he said thank you. And, you know, so I just did the whole like thing. And, you know, because honestly, I mean, we need to have his back right now.
Yeah.
A beleaguered president.
But anyway, you know, going back to the crux of, you know, the topic of about social media oppression, it is absolutely there. And what a shame to have over 8,000 followers. And that's a good amount of followers, but I have other professional colleagues that have got like over 20,000 LinkedIn contacts. But anyway,
I think I have maybe 100 or 200.
You know, to lose the 8,000 contacts and them lose my ability to communicate with them and send them articles and, you know, forensic data and things like that. That's such a shame because those people, you know, lose out. My forensic and law enforcement community loses out. So, you know, here's what I did. I've got another LinkedIn account. And I've got about 450 people, but I've been on LinkedIn since I think 2007. So look at that. I mean, we're in 2019, and it took me all that time, you know, to get like 8,000 people. I think people like Paris Hilton and stuff, and Kim Kardashian get like 3 million people overnight. And here I am. It took me like 9 years.
and then they destroyed it. And they don't even tell you why.
And I'm just a little guy.
So you can actually go on the internet and find just about anything. And if you just Google, oddly enough, LinkedIn jail, you can find the reasons and the cures. And if you Google Facebook jail, the same situation, you can find the reasons and the cures. And, you know, the hardest thing, I agree with you, it's like getting through to AT&T, is you can't get through to these people.
Well, you know, here's the thing that really surprised me, because you and I have Facebook accounts, and we both post on Facebook frequently.
No,
and,
you do.
Well,
I don't.
Do. I guess I do. But you know what? I've never had a single problem with Facebook. Not a single problem. And LinkedIn, I do nothing but professional posts, and I get whammied. Okay, I mean nothing but articles and interviews and and things like that. And you think if I was going to get jammed up being a conservative, I would have been jammed up on Facebook instead of LinkedIn. So I was pretty surprised about that.
Yeah, well, and I think that you're going to see more and more of these interesting phenomena as we get closer to the election, Ron, because I absolutely believe that their algorithms, as they call them, are going to be programmed to knock out a lot of the conservative talk.
And you know what? You said the right phrase there, because people coders build the algorithms.
Sure.
And in those algorithms, the coders build in, when they code, their implicit and confirmation bias. And
yes.
It's always against conservatives.
Yes.
It's never against liberals. Because the liberal stuff I see out there, the socialist, Marxist stuff out there, the lies and deceit that I see out there, none of that is removed. It's only conservative speak
that
is removed.
What's so interesting about that to me is that these companies, the three companies we're talking about here, Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, and there's probably more, were built and live and breathe because of the Republic of America, because that we are a capitalist nation and because they were allowed to do so. If they get their way and have a socialist government, they are not going to exist. The government's going to own them.
You're exactly, isn't that, you're so perceptive, and that's exactly right. And that is the conundrum that I have. Why, when we deal with people that resonate with socialism and Marxism and communism, why would you want that? Because if you got that form of government, the first thing they would do would be to oppress all free speech.
Yes.
Okay? Oppress it all. And that's why the media drives me nuts when they go in
this
direction.
Of New York is doing right now and charging you money for saying certain words, like
exactly.
A legal alien.
You name the oppressive government, and the first thing they did when they got into power is they took over and controlled the media.
Yep.
How about our last cup of coffee?
You got it.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
You're laughing, so there must be something going on in your brain.
You know, now that we're rounding the bend into round three, I thought this would be a good time to talk about urinals.
Great, that sounds exciting. Go for it.
Well, not just any urinals, Linda. Okay, these are urinals in a new municipal building in the city of Portland, Oregon, as if that city hasn't had enough controversy. So now they've decided in the municipal building that I guess they've reconditioned or remodeled or whatever, they are not going to allow urinals in the men's restroom anymore.
Okay, and the reason for that would be?
Okay, so you got to have this liberal inclusivity speak. It's a special kind of speak. It's a special language. And I'm sure they're going to teach it in school, just like Spanish and German and Italian. All right, so they have decided, the CAO, okay, the Chief Administrative Officer, Tom Reinhart, and his claim to fame was that he used to be the chief of staff for controversial Mayor Ted Wheeler. That's the guy that loves Antifa.
Yes.
All right. And then recently, as of this week, they decided that the Portland Police Department was not going to cooperate with ICE anymore. So they're auguring in. But anyway, let's get back to urinals. So Mr. Wheeler and Mr. Reinhart have decided that urinals present the public with arbitrary barriers in their community. Arbitrary barriers.
And the barriers would be against what?
Gender neutrality.
I think we need that barrier so people don't urinate on the floor, but gender neutrality. Okay.
Help me with that.
Genders are not neutral. Okay. I'm a girl. You're a boy. That's the way it is. It's the way God made us. There is no gender neutrality.
Well, you know,
sorry.
That's interesting. And I'm glad you're bringing this up because this is the speak. Okay. So gender neutrality is a speak. It's this language. It's this rhetoric. But it really doesn't mean anything, does it?
Well, it doesn't certainly
mean
anything to me, but they're trying to say that we're all alike. And
right, that's what I think.
And I think that this guy, I think he even wants to put this men and women in the same.
Yeah, so here,
is that
okay.
Where we're going with this?
That's exactly where we're going with this. So they are going to take all the urinals out of the building. Okay, so don't forget, they've already done it. They've reconditioned the building, right? So they've remodeled the entire building, top to ceiling, and or bottom to ceiling or whatever. And in that, they are leaving 104 toilets and stalls, okay?
Okay.
But they are putting in 42 what they refer to as unisex multi-stalls. So basically, women can go into the men's room to go to the bathroom, and men can go into the women's room to go to the bathroom.
What a horrible idea.
Or what they're going to do is they've, and it's hard to kind of understand it, but I think what they've done is created whole new bathrooms that are unisex. So you can still, if you're a man, you can still go into the men's room. You just won't find any urinals there. And by the way, women can walk into that men's room and go to the bathroom.
Okay, okay? Well, here's what I would like people to do. I would like all these people in Portland to go into their homes tonight and take their clothes off. And possibly with their spouse or significant other. And you can see that we are not unisex, okay? Just physically look at people. We are two different sexes in this world. And yes, there are the exceptions to the rule. You know, if you want to talk about transgenders or things like that, the rule in the world happens to be that there are men and there are women. Now, the other thing that I hope Ron, that they do with all these urinals that they're taking out is I hope that they go put them in the middle of their homeless district so that people can quit peeing and pooping on the street.
Boy, don't you
know. So that they actually have somewhere to go, because they haven't solved any problem and this is what they want to do?
Well, you know, here's, I know this is strange, but I like to kind of look deeper into these kind of things where you have this, I know it, that's probably not the right way to say it. You know what where I'm going with this. Okay. But what I'm saying is this is social engineering.
Oh, yes.
So what I mean is a little bit of a deeper investigation, which would actually be kind of fun because it deals with urinals, right? But a deeper investigation. First of all, where is this coming from? Okay, just is this an LGBTQRSTUV community kind of thing? Is it that? I'm not so sure it is. I think that this is a couple of self-appointed social engineers, meaning, you know, Ted Wheeler and his buddy Tom Reinhart, you know, the CAO, who are trying to socially engineer their community.
By
having unisex bathrooms. And here's, listen to this. Here's what Reinhart said, because I pulled up the article. He said, and I mentioned part of this, why are you doing this? You know, why are you taking out the urinals
right.
and why are you doing these unisex stalls? And he says, because I want to remove the arbitrary barriers in our community that reflects our shared values. Whose shared values? That's my point. I'd like to find out whose values this project reflects.
Well, and
wouldn't
it's
you feel weird?
It's
wouldn't you
creepy.
Feel weird?
This is creepy.
It is creepy.
Me. It's like, is somebody a sexual deviant here that wants to go use the other sex's restroom? I mean, something is wrong with this picture, and this is nobody's shared values. I'm sorry, this is not America's shared values. So here's my question, as I always ask, Ron, who does it help and who does it hurt?
That's exactly right. And you know what I would like to see? And maybe I'll do a little experiment in one of these later coffee conversations. I'll come up with all sorts of cool stuff from my urinal investigation. But number one, they're using taxpayers' money for this. So was this something that appeared in the city council where they voted on it? Did the public have an opportunity? Because it's a municipal building. It's open to the public. Did the public have an opportunity to have a say-so as to, you know, you're going to remove these urinals and everything? The next thing is, I would love to have a camera outside in the hallway pointed towards the unisex bathroom. And the only purpose for the camera would be, I want to see if anybody uses it, you know? Or are they all going in to the separate men's, you know, men's going into men's bathrooms and women going into women's bathrooms?
Well, will they still have men's and women's? Will they still have them?
Well, okay, so yes. Yes, they did.
Okay.
But here's the deal. They're going to have gender-specific bathrooms. But the men's bathrooms are not going to have any urinals because they are gender neutral. So women can walk into the men's bathroom and use it if they need to.
That's not fair to men.
And men can walk into the women's bathroom and use it if they want to.
And that's not fair to the women.
Of course it's not. So I think that would be, albeit bizarre, I think it would be a very interesting social experiment investigation to find out if there's actually any resonance to this whole gender neutrality thing, and if whose values is the city of Portland representing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know whose values, but I don't think it's the majority of America's values.
Okay.
And anyway.
Anyway, and by the way, with all the crap going on in Portland, they've got nothing to do except to talk about stuff like this.
I know. Their homeless problem is out of control. And this is, now, I want to talk about vaping deaths.
Oh, yeah. That's a serious issue. Let's do that.
It is a serious issue. And in New Jersey, they've got some. In Virginia, they've got some. But
when you say some what?
Some vaping deaths. I'm sorry.
So people dying as a result of vaping too much.
Right. But you and I had an interesting conversation. I think we were in the car. And what I said, and I'm going to say it again, because I now have the figures to back me up with what I said, is I said that, you know, we don't hear a huge outcry from all of the politicians, from people everywhere in the country about vaping, okay? However, we hear lots and lots and lots about our Second Amendment and about people who have died because of these mass shootings. Now, you know better than I about how many people in the last year have died in mass shootings.
I think in the last year, there have been less than 100. Okay, I would say there'd probably been somewhere between 60 and 80. And that's I'm talking on the lower side of 80. I mean, I could look it up, but I'm pretty sure in you know, because I look at all the mass shootings and kind of do a body count. I think we're having them, but I don't think we've crossed 100.
Okay.
I think 80 is a high number right now.
Okay. Well, over 800 people in the United States have lung problems related to vaping. And a number of people have died, and I don't know the exact number. I know that they say, you know, state by state, some, like there's 15 in New Jersey and Virginia, and there's different amounts in different places. If you add all those up, I have no doubt that it is above the amount that were killed by mass murder shootings, okay? If it is not right now, it will shortly be, because the whole vaping lung problem is exploding. So people that have been doing this now are seeing the effects of it, and it's just really becoming a big problem. I want to hear the same outcry about the vaping, which is killing people and harming people, as we hear about guns.
Okay.
Okay. But anyway, just to say that there are quite a few people right now that are having serious issues with that. And then, you know, I want to kind of switch it up for a moment, if I may. And I want to talk about two different strange things. And one is, you know, because we were just in Europe, this little article kind of got my attention as I was reading, and I want to talk about it. So there's products in America that we have that other countries don't have and they don't use. And, you know, I'm going to say one out front that is different in the two countries that is not in the article at all that I read.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, since I do promotional products and printing for a living, and I have factories that are in Europe, okay? And so when I place an order for something, let's just say a mug in Europe that is imprinted, my order comes back and it reads, tampon printed, da-da-da. Okay?
What does
and
that mean?
Well, I mean, that was the very first time I had to look twice. I said, what? And because to us, a tampon is a woman's
hygiene
item.
Product, yeah.
And in Europe, it is a what we would call pad printing. So if you think about like a rubber stamp or
I get
that
the
type
idea.
Of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a soft, cushy pad that prints on the item, picks up the ink and prints on the item. And that's what they call tampon printing. So it's a difference between the two countries. Another bright yellow thing that they don't have so much overseas is yellow school buses. They're uniquely American.
Okay.
America decided to use the
but that's for visibility, right?
Right. It's an actual color called school bus glossy yellow that we use in the United States. But every other country does not use yellow. So it's just interesting that the difference. Another thing that they don't have in other countries that we have everywhere in our country is garbage disposals.
Wow.
Yeah. And we were just in Europe.
And we had a kitchen. And
but I don't think we had a garbage disposal.
I don't think we did. Yeah, no. You're right.
No. And the other thing, you know, speaking along the same lines, is air conditioning. Other countries don't use air conditioning
correct.
Like we do.
That's correct.
And we were extremely warm when we were in Europe.
Italy, yeah.
And, and we really missed our air conditioning, to be honest with you. The other thing that's pretty unique to America is nowhere else in the world are there grape-flavored anything. Grape-flavored, like grape-flavored Skittles or candy or things like that.
Okay.
They might have different flavors like blackcurrant, but they don't have...
I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you know why? Is there some reason they don't have grape?
Well, I don't think that they have corn core grapes, which is what grape flavoring is made from.
Oh, okay. that would make sense. Okay. Even though they have a lot of grapes in Europe, like in France, they don't have the Concord grape.
Exactly.
Probably because it's considered to be a lower form of grape.
I don't. That's discriminatory.
It is. I'm not kidding you. I think it is.
You're grape discriminating.
Yeah.
Red Solo cups.
Oh no, that's American.
American, okay? As American as Toby Keith.
And that's exactly right. And you know what? I wouldn't want Europeans to have Red Solo cups. Okay, we got to have something unique to the American experience.
Well, and you know, speaking of cups in Europe, and this is really true that we see. So the takeout cup, the coffee culture, where we take out our coffee. They don't do that in Europe so much. You drink
right.
your coffee there, and you drink it in a regular ceramic type of cup.
That's exactly right. And you know, and correctly, some of the countries are actually getting rid of, and I just read this a couple of weeks ago, the water bottle, the plastic water bottle,
mm-hmm.
that's going bye-bye. And straws are going bye-bye, and pretty soon plastic bags are going to go bye-bye. And you know the things that, and I think these are terrible. It was a great invention, but it's terrible for the environment. And you know, like when you get a six-pack and everything is all, you know,
the lid, you know, how you
mm-hmm. grab it, you know, and it's, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a stringy kind of lid thing.
Yeah.
And they, of course, that ends up in the ocean and around fish
right.
and everything, and it's horrible. That's going the way to the dodo.
Well, that's good. I mean, I'm glad for that because when I see those piles of plastic in the ocean,
it's
very disturbing.
Absolutely nuts.
Another thing that other countries don't have that we have is screens on their windows. They do not use screens on their windows.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when we were staying in that villa in Italy and we had the big windows, remember,
mm-hmm.
I would open those windows because I loved it. There wasn't a screen on a single window in that whole building that I saw.
No, and we had to close the windows when it
because
started
of
hailing.
Bugs and, yeah.
and bugs.
And
yeah,
bugs.
Bugs
yeah.
will come in. In fact, when we checked into Lake Como, they told us not to leave the door open because bugs will fly in.
That's exactly right.
And then just the last thing is white bread. White bread is uniquely American.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And it's useless, okay? White bread offers no nutritional... It's no nutritional value whatsoever.
But it's really yummy with peanut butter and jelly on it.
Well, listen, speaking of food, and we've had our coffee, and we had our dessert, and you had your Ready Whip.
I didn't have Ready Whip. I put a little bit on my ice cream.
Well, then you had it. You either had it or you didn't have it, okay? But it's time for bed. That's what I want to talk about, because I got to get up early in the morning and fly out of here.
And I have to get up early in the morning and get to work.
And the dog is already conked out.
Of course.
All right.